theme for the afternoon talk is the influence of the image. Now, just before walking in, I was having a one-to-one, I call it an interview, interview there. And we were having some exploration or touching upon teachers. And it is one of the questions which is quite often asked, and along the lines of, do I need a teacher? And the good person said to me, do you have a view about this? And my response, sadly, I have a view about everything. You name it, I have a view about it. mostly. And just to take a moment or two, because it is a question which does arise quite regularly on retreats for the participants. And my response in this particular area, there are some, and this may apply to some of you here, who will say, and it is important, there, yes, I have a teacher, and that woman or man is my teacher. And it is a common occurrence, we might say, in the tradition there, so the specific teacher, she or he has certain number of students. But it is just one expression. A second expression for others, and this may well apply to you here, and one may say, I don't have a single teacher, but I do have a main teacher. And that, again, that woman or the man, she or he, is my main teacher, but at times I have contact with other teachers. It's another potential and possibility. But it's not the only one. There are others, including, I'm sure, a number of you here, who will say, I don't have a single teacher, I don't have a main teacher, but I find what works for me well is to have contact with certain teachers. There isn't one who is main, but I do find I'm getting benefit from that contact with those teachers. And some of you, just to take Andor and Tovina as an example here, will look at, possibly look at the program. You'll see there, there's a retreat on. There is trust and confidence in what is being offered, appreciation for the teachers established, and one comes and attends that retreat. And sometimes people come because of a single teacher, which is fine, or two or three teachers there. With also the potential and possibility, of course, to have teachers outside the networks here and really benefit from that. The important thing with this, of course, is that in the listening and in the practices which take place, we do feel they are beneficial, they are insightful, and we are learning from. And here, in the approach that we as teachers take in relationship to people, we take very noticeably two things. We take an adult position. And what I mean is, we are, as teachers, are adults, and we are speaking to a group of adults. There is a tendency in religion to make the gap. Sometimes the gap which is made is like the guru and disciple. And that can undermine the authority of the devotee, elevate the authority of the guru, the teacher, and it has in my view, forgive me, no, don't forgive me, no. Just, but it has in my view a slightly parental child relationship. We're not interested in that here. We're not interested in to be gurus, a father figure, a mother figure there. We're interested in sharing our experience and our knowledge with you from adult to adults, where the relationship is not devotional, this the elevation of the other there, but the relationship is one of friendship with our hopefully quiet authority to share our understanding and our knowledge with you. And that principle is really important for us, and it's very much inspired by the Buddha's teachings on what he referred to as Kalyanamitta, simply translated as the good friend. He broke away from this devotional guru relationship because of the gap, which can undermine the devotee, though it has real benefits, and replaced it with a network of friends and friendship. Really, really important. This was radical in ancient India. But still recognizing that some people in the Sangha, in the community of practitioners, have the years of experience, have the understanding, and share that. And as a small advertisement, Asaf wrote a wonderful thesis on the from the text, quoting the many passages in the text where the Buddha referred to this as a teaching and practice of good friendship. And hopefully we receive that from you, not always, and hopefully we offer that to you, and hopefully always. There. In coming back to the theme and the exploration here, there, it is to recognize the influence here of the image. And I'd just like to touch upon that with you. Sometimes in our inner life, I'll take the difficult for a moment and then move to the creative with this. We like to say to ourselves and convince ourselves and others to use a language of living in the real world. Living in the real world is not easy, because even the language, living in the real world, there is an image of living in the real world, even that already. In these kind of teachings, there is something to track and follow, and I'll try to explain what I mean here. The Buddha uses, it's a little conceptual, but hang in, that conditions and only conditions make something arise. But it's worth remembering. Conditions and only conditions make something arise. And it's up to us not only to recognize, this is on the difficult for the moment, what is difficult inside of us about what arises, and we do wish to be clear about what is arising for us, but it's not enough just to see what is arising. We shouldn't think, oh, because I see it, because I'm clear about this is going on inside of me, therefore it should go away. It's putting too much faith in mindfulness, too much faith in samadhi, in concentration, to imagine that somehow is the answer to our prayers, so to speak, there. So it can be that in that which arises, it will be, what arises in the difficult experiences, whatever it might be about, it has only arisen, and nothing else can make it arise except certain conditions which contribute to it. Sometimes those certain conditions which influence what arises is not just all inside of us. This is not a selfie tradition. It's all about me. It's not a view which I find horrendous. The view is, oh, I create my own suffering. This is a selfie culture. It's not a view, oh, I am like this because, well, it must be my choice. This is to put in a lot of hardship and blame, and quite often a lot of guilt on people by saying, well, it's your choice, you create your own suffering, and all of that. This is living in images itself. So sometimes, to repeat a little bit, there is the experience of what arises, and what are the conditions which generate it. Sometimes the conditions are outside of ourselves. Shouldn't imagine it's all inside. Sometimes what happens around us really has an impact on our life. We've all got memories of physical pain which happened to us, which we didn't invite, we didn't want, we got sick, somebody hit us, there was an accident. All these things have an impact on our heart and our mind and our bodies. And we didn't create that. We didn't ask for that, whether we were children or whether we were adults. So sometimes it's to be clear about what the conditions are, sometimes from the outside. And even without all of that, even if we are blessed to have been freed from major sickness, from abuse, from acts of violence, and much else, still the nature is having its impact. Look at it. It wasn't like this 50 years ago. As I about 20 years, just take the physical for a moment, I began to notice these white spots down my leg. Well, that's interesting. I am. I thought I was a white person. Now there's some proof of it. And then they began to expand, you see. And now, so they have a fancy word for it. It's called vitiligo. And so the skin disappears. So I call it nature's body art. It's kind of formless. There, it's got all different shapes and sizes. There, I didn't say I think I had some body art in my old age, etc. I mentioned maybe I should have a tattoo. I said it to my daughter. She said, "Oh, Dad, it's a slightly hypocritical. My daughter's got tattoos on her feet. She's got an amazing one up the back, and then she's telling her father, well, you can't have them, you're too old." Oh, yes, I can. Keep your eye out next year. Anyway, so sometimes the world around is having its impact. There are conditions which affect us. Yeah. Sometimes it is not easy to handle those conditions. We didn't invite, we didn't ask, it's not easy to handle them. And part of our practice and exploration with the outer conditions, finding ways to be clear about, to understand, and if it's in our past, can we, with those conditions from the past, what is it that I need to be clear about and understand so that I am at peace with the past? I may know what happened. I may have strong images. This happened to me. Last week, last month, last year, when I was young, or whatever. I may feel hurt, traumatized, wounded, affected. The images, remember, it's the images, because it happened in the past. The images are still arising. Those images may be landing in the body. So the mind may have faded a little bit from it all, But there are experiences in the body of contraction. Quite often, very often actually, with the past, in the chest area, centre of the chest area, and up through, sometimes near the throat. The impact from the old, those images, those memories, that's the images, landing in the, from the old, registered on our vulnerable, sensitive body, and it still sticks there. We can still feel, at times, some hurt, or some wound, or some painful memory. There's still some feeling of some contraction in the body. It could be any single place in the body. One of the more common ones would be in the chest, this particular area there. And it's part of our practice. And there are two things with this. That in the practice of dealing with hurt, wound, pain, guilt, hardship, memory, and so forth, can we turn our attention to the difficult area, which for some of you is being felt in a location, and just quietly explore that area? Sometimes just developing the interest and the mindfulness from the lower part and just quietly moving the attention up through or into that difficult area, so that the attention or the mindfulness and the concentration is just quietly opening out the cells a little bit to some painful memory in the body, opening out the cells, and an extra support for that at times can just be breathing in and breathing out. And in the quiet, deep breath, it also expands the cells. And that expansion of the cells can help to reduce the contraction, which is the an effect of what happened yesterday, last week, last month, last decade. To really see the present. And that, and the second aspect of all of this as well, if we have some painful memories of the past, or we have some painful situations, we may not actually remember what it was. It may not even be, so to speak, in this lifetime, meaning it could be generational in various ways, that still can be influencing us. And though there isn't any concrete memory, this happened to me, but one just senses something is hurting or touching, the one thing we need to be clear about is we are a little extra vulnerable. And what I mean by that is, if a difficult situation is occurring in our life in the present, somebody shouts at you, somebody steals something from you, there is a threat, you lose your job, the person walks out on you or whatever, that itself can have its touch and impact. Or it could be just a memory about something unrelated. It could be about some anxiety in the future. That easily can contribute to some contraction. But one also has a history as well. And as the Buddha commented, it doubles it. There's the difficulty of what is present, combined with the unresolved difficulty from the past. And sometimes we wonder, why am I having such a difficulty handling this situation? And it's the situation, if it was just of itself, we could probably handle it much better. But it's impacting, there's a contraction, there's a reaction inside, and the old and the immediate hit together. We're struggling then. So part of our practice is, I know it all sounds bad news, I'll get to the other aspect in a minute. Part of our practice is there, is that if there is a situation in our life, and that include obviously here as well, there is a certain refinement and subtlety and openness which takes place with us. And if there is some impact upon us, whatever that may be, or we sense it, can we remember to come as quickly as we can back to the body, feel some openness with the body, feel some expansion, and the inhaling can help. We breathe in and breathe out, and see if we can keep that contracted area open. And our mindfulness of breathing will help. And that will help to protect us from contracting around. But the most important, because of the images, if there are some images or memories from the past, as I mentioned, we may be mindful of it, we may be aware of it, but it's still bothering us. It's still troubling. Those images, that could be yesterday or before, still having its impact. If it's having its impact and we're seeing it and the seeing is not changing, the duty, the responsibility of us is to be clear, what needs to change in my way of looking? Quite often that is difficult, and what we find ourselves doing possibly is blaming the other, understandably. It could be blaming ourselves, and all of that blame are images. They're all negative interpretations of the event. And the dark images, the negative interpretations, is that which gets in the way of resolving the problem. That's the problem with the images. The Buddha uses this word, nimitta. Is N-I-M-I-T-T-A. He's really concerned about living in images. And living in images is that and only that which stops us from living with reality. There are no images in reality. This looking, in which it is not easy, even for adults, of course, to be able to say, ask ourselves quietly and respectfully and sensitively, what is a fresh way of looking at this? And that fresh way might never have been thought of by you or me before. Nothing has ever come to us. And sometimes, with the meditations and with the listening and the mindfulness and receptivity, something can come out of the deep, which is where the resolution will come from. Come out of the deep. We see a fresh way of looking at it, and we know the pain is over. This is how we know. We know the pain is over because we can look at the past and it's no longer troubling. We recognize the fact of the past, the difficulty of what happened, the hurt, as it, or the blame that came upon us, whichever happened. We're not in any denial. We're not trying to explain it away with somebody else or to ourselves. But we know the change has come because we can look at the past and the problem of it has finished. It is over. And when that something is over, because of the clarity, we have much more strength in the being, much more authority to be able to look at these difficult situations and say to ourselves, not always, but I can handle this because it's not getting doubled from the past. And so an aspect of liberation teachings is one which is one aspect, and an important one, it is liberation from the problems of the past which are impacting on the present. Yeah. And it's not your fault, not one's own fault. It's just the conditions were there and this happened. And any problematic aspect of the mind, whether it's called indifference, what's the point, I'm not getting anywhere, it's no good, nothing's ever changing, these are all in the world of the images. Whether it's fear, whatever the fear may be about, one is afraid of this, or afraid of him or her or that. Whether it's negativity or blame, whether it's greed, consumer greed here, I want this, I must have the latest, whatever it is, what is it, iPhone, which has surely, the Apple company is absolutely rotten to the core, and much else. I won't say too much, I'm in danger of losing right speech. So sometimes in the circumstances of things, we often hear in these a slightly small sideways step here. A virtue is being made in the spiritual circles about being open. When I hear this, I just groan. It's no wonder my hair is completely white. We have to be open. The problem with human beings, and the great difficulty of human beings, it's quite the opposite. We are far too open. And we're so open that we're so easily manipulated. We're open to what the politician's saying, even if we argue with them. We're open to what the media says, which is owned by the oligarchy for the most part, with a few exceptions. We're open to all the messages that society keeps telling us, what we should be and what we should do, and what it means to be successful, etc. Our trouble is we're far too damned open. And that being less open might be healthier, and one is not open to be able to say no. Go away, the system, capitalism or whatever. So there's no great virtue in being open. There are times when it's precious and beautiful. There are times when it's warm and wise and expansive, but there are plenty of times where the openness is utterly unhealthy. We are manipulated because as human beings, we get so easily manipulated. And our wisdom is to say yes to openness when it's wise. Our wisdom says no to openness when it's not wise. And that, as I mentioned, the relationship in our practice and our exploration is to see the images. With every problematic state of mind, indifference, apathy, agitation, anxiety, worry, of course there are feelings in there. Of course there's contact in there, certain energies there, memories in there, and there are images. One can't have fear and blame and a problematic state of mind without images in there somewhere. And this teaching is to explore deeply and not be in the spell of the images. It isn't easy, but it's honest. It's a nightmare living in daydreams, living in fantasies, living in hopes and disappointments, living in wanting and not wanting, living in being pulled in one direction and then aversion and reaction in the other. That's the spell on us of images. And to really notice, when I look outwardly as a human being there, and every contact with the negativity and with the thought, every single contact with the thought, and in the looking out there, it requires all of that with the image, which perpetuates anti-Semitism, it perpetuates Islamophobia, it perpetuates racism, it perpetuates discrimination against other people who one may not even know or even ever had any real deep conversation with. And all of that stuff that goes on, which you and I and thoughtful human beings are concerned about, is because one identifies with the image. It could not possibly happen unless the image and the negativity and the view got stuck together. And all the suffering in the world, inflicted in every single context without exception, is because the images mattered more than the life. That is the terror and the nightmare of images. Is it any wonder the Buddha said, the liberated ones, those who are free from all of that, they have realized, they know the doorway, the gateway to animitta, the absence of living in these images, because of the violence and the aggression that can so easily emerge out of them, or the helplessness that a person can feel because the image is, I can't do anything. And when a human being says, I can't do anything, this is the death of the spiritual of the human being. It is the death of imagination. It's the death of creativity, because one has taken on the view of indifference and apathy, either with ourselves, or with our loved ones, or with our country, or with our neighbours, or whatever it might be. Images are a key feature to knowing the real. Let's see if we can be free from the image, the harmful, the dangerous one. How am I doing for time? Not bad. There's a few minutes left for the more. Sometimes, image, that the depth of exploration, and this is the wonderful and precious aspect, we are remarkably creative creatures. Confirmation of it is all around. Unfortunately, we are remarkably, sadly, destructive creatures as well. Take on the creative part for a few minutes. And sometimes out of the being, it's an important thing, the creative idea may come. Some of you, while sitting and walking and spending this time together, sometimes a creative initiative, an idea comes. Sometimes, like myself and possibly you, we get an idea and we kind of write down a few words and say, we want to put that in. When it arises, it's an image, it's a vision, it's a sense of a potential of something that we might offer or share or give. And we see at times how sometimes in the depth of our being, it's sometimes a kind of surprise to ourselves. Something quite remarkable comes out of us, and we don't know where did that come from, or sometimes where the hell did that one come from, and something really remarkable. And we see it as well with some of our beautiful artists and creative people and visionaries and people dedicated. Something has moved the life. If nothing happens, then it's just an image. It's just a good idea. But if it's authentic, it belongs to the real. And we only know the so-called good idea, or the sudden insight, or the vision, or the creative expression, we only know it, that it is true and it is authentic, not by itself, but by the fact it enters into the real. And therefore, it belongs to the real. And if it doesn't go anywhere there, it's a fantasy. It's just another empty, useless image. It's just another nice thought, just another projection. But it doesn't belong to the real. It belongs into the emptiness of the image. And in order for something to actualize, to enter into the real, and it belongs to the real, there is not just the spark of some offering that may emerge spiritually or creatively or caringly or lovingly or whatever. But for that to happen, it can't happen of itself. It's going to need, surprise, surprise, mindfulness. Surprise, surprise. It's going to need intention. Surprise, surprise. It's going to need some concentration to make it happen. Surprise, surprise. It's going to need probably some letting go of some other things in one's life. I know letting go is not easy there, except when you have a shit in the morning. It's very easy. But sometimes that's not easy on a hot day, I have to say. I'm talking from experience here. There. And so sometimes for something to actually... In the toilets, in the squats, on the retreats in Buddh Gaya, we have had a wonderful sign above the squat. It said, "For Dharma bums only." And it was. So some... excuse the one-liners. So in order for something to enter into the real, and therefore support the real, and not support the dark images and the projections there, mindfulness, concentration, energy, interest, love, intention there. And when we put those factors together, then there's real opportunity for something to express itself. And quite often, we may have the creative view, the creative idea, but it doesn't actually happen, and it may just be because we haven't got the energy. We haven't got the concentration to do it. We haven't got the intention. We haven't got the patience. So it swirls around in ideas and images and thoughts. And this teaching is not to make us feel good about ourselves. Dharma's not concerned with you or me feeling good about ourselves. There's far more important things in life to be interested in. What the Dharma is concerned about is releasing the best. It's not liberating myself into a nice, cosy, sleep-ridden cocoon. But there are a few Buddhists around like that, I have to say. I've met some of them. But it's liberation, not for me. It's the liberation of that which is creative, which is engaged with life, which is nourishing and fulfilling. It's to allow something to emerge out. And therefore, when the dark, the negative, the blindness, the faults are explored and we're looking at them, and then we're not living in this obstructions, that's the Buddha's word here, these obstructions, these hindrances, as he refers to them. When there's some, some space from all of that, it's in order for something else to be released, insights and understanding and friendship and love with each other. And that is a primary aspect of our exploration, a primary aspect of the teachings which are here. So So do, as often said here, two aspects. Listen, as we say, to the deep inner voice, the deeper one. If you have a sense the voice or voices which are going on seem a bit superficial and shallow, take notice of them. It could be some old voices from the past, like your mother or father or something. Forget them. Listen to the deeper ones out of the being. Sometimes deep voices come from mother and father. I have to say that, I'm a father. but sometimes it's that listening to allow something from the deep to really show itself. And the challenge can be, from that, how can that be actualized? How can we be free enough for something beautiful to manifest and express itself? And then that inner life can be really in harmony and in tune with what is important, what is authentic, and what is real. And we will know that indifference, being afraid of ourselves and others, and blame actually has nothing to do with the real. Okay, thank you for listening. Let's have a quiet minute together, shall we, please? May all beings explore deeply into life. May all beings uncover endless discoveries. May all beings live with love and liberation. Time now is 4:45, and this 45-minute period, some further standing or sitting as you might wish. And 5:30, there is the food.